low win rates, excessive discounting, challenging negotiations. Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group. We're an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. This podcast is about one question: how to transform your team into peak performers. If you want the answer, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.
You know, I'll just share, Tony, thrilled to be having this discussion with you today and really pulling together different points of view and perspectives on a topic that I know we're both really passionate about, and, you know, specifically around sales coaching. And I'll just say for our group here today, this is also a really good illustration. As many of you know, SRG is now part of SBI. And I think this is a really good example of where we pulled together the thought, the methodology, the approaches. And we're going to share some of that, both from a kind of sales consulting and methodology playbook perspective, as well as the training and adoption perspective. So, Tony, welcome. Maybe you can just say hello to our group today.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. So really excited to be here with all of you today and talk about this. And, you know, it's been great having SRG join the SBI family here. It fills a need that often our clients have asked for. So it's really been fun working with Ray and Alonzo and the whole team from SRG. I feel like we can deliver more to our clients now and help them even in more ways than we used to be able to. So super excited to be here with you all today and talk a little bit about this important topic that we're seeing as quite the trend as we get into an annual planning cycle for most of our clients who are on a calendar year schedule. So thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great. And, you know, I think it's really been interesting just in preparations and other discussions to see how well aligned we are on a number of these topics, and especially around some of the things we'll talk about with coaching and managing enablement. So we'll just share a little bit about kind of the journey where we're headed here. So we're going to start out and talk a little bit about why this is important. You know, and certainly coaching has been an important topic and continues to be, but specifically in sharing some research that SBI has done around some emerging trends, what we're seeing going into 2024 from a planning perspective, and how coaching is really integral to that, to improving the productivity and performance of the sales team, and how we can pull that through. We'll talk about the need for some more of a methodology or a thoughtful approach to coaching, that often coaching ends up being ad hoc. So what do we do to kind of get past that? And how do we maximize that ROI for coaching for the time spent? So really make that come to life and make it as successful as possible. And then ultimately talking a little bit about how, you know, we implement. So what can we do around some of the emerging trends on collaborative training? If you've been to other webinars, you've heard us talk about that. But, you know, one of the challenges is always, how do you get people to do things differently, and what happens after training? So we'll touch on that a little bit as we go as well. But Tony, just to start that discussion, maybe you could give us a little backdrop to some of the things we're seeing, you know, starting this year, from the research that SBI has done on what's happening from a growth forecast and a confidence perspective. And then we'll tie that into, you know, how this relates to those frontline managers.
Yeah, happy to. So one of the things that we do is annually and semi-annually, we actually do a market survey. We're actually in the process right now of refreshing some of this data. You know, we usually do it in Q1 and Q3. But one of the things that we wanted to start with was a little bit of an outward in view as to what is the market seeing. And if you think back 12 months ago, when we had initially spoke to clients, not initially, but when we started tracking this data, and then we compared it to Q1, there was a lot of uncertainty last year at this time as people were getting into annual planning and as people were kind of thinking about their 2023 budget. The challenge was, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty in the market. No one knew that, you know, rates, how high they were going to go. There were consistent rate pressures, which was, you know, causing capital constraints across clients looking to make investment, or cost of debt that they were currently carrying on their books was rising. So there were a lot of uncertainties in the market. And then there was the question of, are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? Are we coming out of a recession? Will inflation continue? Will it not? So a lot of uncertainty. And what that did then, as we got into first quarter, the data that we got back from over 100 CEOs that we spoke with was over half of them had quickly changed their plan, either upward or downward, in the first quarter. So, you know, that was just symptomatic of some of the volatility that we were dealing with 12 months ago. And, you know, more so, though, the thing that's important is there was a lot of confidence coming into 2023. So I would say there have been mixed bags of that confidence right now as we've looked back into 2023. And, you know, that confidence is one of the things that as companies are now entering fourth quarter and going back into another annual planning session, the question is, you know, is it going to be volatile again going into 24, or has it begun to stabilize? And, you know, so as we've begun the survey process, you know, we'll talk more about these results at a later date when they're all officially in. But we have seen stabilization, at least from the perspective of the CEOs that we've begun the early conversations with. So be on the lookout for that. That's additional research that SBI will be producing here in the coming months. But just as you think about annual planning, be thinking about, you know, predictability. And, you know, as opposed to last year when you were thinking about this, lots of unpredictability, lots of uncertainty. So, Ray, I think that's the key takeaway as I think back to where we are this year versus where we are last year, looking at coming into the new year.
No, I think that's a great backdrop, Tony. And, you know, there's one other piece of data from a Q2 survey that talked about the CEO assessment. In other words, do they see things, you know, continuing to slow? Is it kind of status quo, or is it accelerating? And are we, you know, kind of getting hunkering down, or are we getting ready for recovery? And I think this, you know, paints an optimistic picture. Now, again, this changes quarter by quarter, but maybe you could just give a little commentary on kind of what we're seeing. What do CEOs think as this emerges during the year?
Yeah. So this has been the interesting one because second half of last year, you know, in that Q2 timeframe, we were still a little bit in the things were still going really well, if you will. You know, all the rates hadn't started coming up. There was less discussion, albeit some, around recession and where we were. So, you know, people were still seeing stuff accelerating, you know, Q2 22. In Q4, significant change in that it was really beginning to tail off. And then in Q1, that continued. Now, again, we're going through the process of resurveying those same clients now and some new ones as well. We are beginning to see an uptake. We are not economists, but, you know, this is one of the things that we look at as we think about how to help out our customers. And more importantly, the thing that we have begun to see hold true is this chart that I'll draw your attention to on the right-hand side. So, you know, last year, it was all around, if we were to look at this data from a year ago, it was all around being prepared and being ready for the recession and being able to weather the storm, if you will. Transpose that with where we are now and what we're seeing and what we've been seeing in the recent results, it's all about recovery. You know, you might not like interest rates at 6 or 7% if you've got a big cost of capital in your business or if you've got a heavy debt load in your business, but at least it's stable. And you can actually figure out how to operate within a model where you have predictability. Volatility makes planning difficult. So now that we are seeing things flatten out, if you will, everyone is tending to be more focused on recovery and getting out of this, you know, this recessionary period. So that's where we've seen the shift. So we've seen the shift of people, Ray, more going to being on their front foot and, you know, being more provocative, being more, you know, active, proactive in their efforts. So as you all think about planning, you know, I think one of the questions is, and Ray, I think this segues nicely into what we're doing. What are you guys going to be doing to be proactive? What are you going to be doing to put your organization, your front line on their front feet because that's where we're seeing the market going. And, you know, we see an opportunity there that all of you are hopefully getting ahead of.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think what's really interesting to me is as we're looking at this data and kind of looking at the growth, it's, you know, kind of going from there was a mantra of do more with less. And it's like, yeah, do more with less, and we still need to grow. So really do more. Like, we still need to increase the top line. And we'll share some other research that speaks to sales approaches that are being effective related to that. But I think for today's topic is we want to narrow in on that frontline manager and the coaches. And we think that's a key driver of growth and sales performance. You know, thinking about why is that important as we look into next year, into 2024, and what are some of the specific challenges that they run into, right? You know, why coaching has always been important, but why is it even more important today? So if you think about that, you know, why is this important? We know that deals are more complex, and certainly your reps will say that, you know, hey, it feels that way, but there's more people involved, more stakeholders. We have people that maybe never had a seat at the table, but they're there. Executives are getting involved, scrutinizing decisions in a different way. It doesn't just feel like deals are taking longer to close, but they actually are. So, you know, I think we've all run into that, but the delayed decision cycles or budget approval and things kind of changing quarter by quarter. And, you know, reps are having to do things differently, and they may not have the skills or the mindset to do that effectively. The final piece I'll just put on this is then sales leaders and managers are being asked to grow, but without adding additional expense. And how do you do that? Well, you have to be able to improve performance with what you have. And that gets to, can we make the team more productive? And how do we get, you know, more out of the existing team through better skills, better process, better execution? And that really comes back to coaching. So, Tony, any additional thoughts on that? Or, you know, I know you've seen this as well, but why coaching is a topic that we're hearing a lot from our clients these days?
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, right, I think a lot of it comes back to, you kind of got to look back over the last 18 months. Last 18 months, you know, we had the great resignation, and then we had a whole bunch of people find new opportunities. A lot of sellers actually took on new jobs, took the opportunity to take a break, make a change, do something different. And as a result, a lot of people ended up in elevated positions. A lot of people ended up in, you know, first line manager positions or upper level management positions for the first time. And, you know, one of the things that we always had historically, a bit more cliche, was this concept of the super seller, right? The person who, you know, got promoted into being a frontline manager because they were a great seller. And, you know, naturally, to keep that person around, you move them into management. But that doesn't make them a great manager. You have to enable coaching. You have to enable a coach to be a great coach. You know, some of the best players on the field wouldn't make a very good coach. You know, some people out there right now might think that Coach Prime is the greatest coach to have ever entered college football. But, you know, every cornerback in the NFL will probably not make a great future college football coach. There's not many people who can just ascend into that because they were a great player. Same analogy plays true within the selling ranks. So you have to enable people to be great coaches. You have to coach them to be great coaches and not let them do what we often see, which is just go do the job of the sellers. So Ray, this really got exacerbated in 2021 and 22. Right after the resignation, everyone started taking on new roles. And frankly, people had not been in manager line roles before, leading individual contributors, and organizations hadn't had this influx of first line managers that they needed to teach to be great managers. So this is where we're seeing more of an emphasis now than before, because, you know, COVID caused a lot of people to rethink and exit if they were able to. So we lost a lot of great managerial talent. New people got put into the role, as well as people took new roles altogether. So all those things combined kind of from a macro perspective to create this gap, if you will, in effective coaching, which is playing out now in terms of people looking for great coaching and great advice to be able to be more effective sellers.
Yeah, I think very well said, and we're seeing that trend. Frontline managers tend to not get as much investment or attention as maybe the sellers. It's easier to say, oh, we need a new sales methodology, or we're going to put everybody through sales training at SKO. But, you know, those are stopgap issues versus can we really invest in our managers to be more productive and to really help drive that. So they're a key linchpin. And we'll talk more about that. I appreciated Wilson's comment. He said, you know, our plan is to grow coaching practice and teaching the frontline managers to be great coaches themselves. And, you know, I think that's critical and really forward thinking. Invest there and, you know, figuring out how you do that. So we're going to talk more about that. And, you know, it's no surprise, but if we can get coaching right, it helps to create leverage. So that really is the pull through is, you know, for every manager that has 8 or 10 reps, if we can improve their skills and they can cascade that down, now we are getting that leverage across the organization. And the idea is to help salespeople learn how to solve their own problems. So the manager doesn't have to be the one riding to the rescue and putting out fires all the time. And, you know, we see in a lot of organizations, the manager is that super seller. You know, they're the ones that are getting involved to close the deals, or they take over the calls when they're observing them. And I always ask the question, you know, if you feel like you need to take over on those calls, what's happening the 90% of the time that you're not there, right? They're figuring it out. They're practicing on your clients. And that's a really expensive way to do training is by turning your reps loose and having them figure it out. So anything else you see, Tony, in terms of the pull through or, you know, the leverage that good coaching creates?
You know, one of the things I would say it does, you know, another thing that good coaching does is it gives you more predictability. I mean, when managers are great coaches and they're not taking over the deal and they're coaching to a process and coaching to something that's more consistent, then that actually reflects in all the systems and people have better hygiene around their opportunities because you're regularly talking about it. And, you know, try to avoid the thought of, you know, an interrogation and, you know, is everything properly updated? An effective coach will ask the right questions using the tools and the systems and the processes that, you know, drive the behavior for people to do the right things. So, you know, you think about the byproduct effect of that, right? Better hygiene, better forecasting, better, you know, predictability in the actual business itself, not only the rep and their personal attainment, but when you do that consistently across an organization, better predictability for the business as a whole, to your stakeholders, to your leadership. It's just a basic acumen that everyone needs to be better at coaching to, so that we get the byproduct of why we put all those processes and systems and technologies in place, so that we can actually run the business with visibility and not be blind to what's going on in the field.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, for the sales leaders, if they can get a more predictable revenue stream, that's just goodness, right? I mean, that helps in reporting to the board or in terms of them being able to forecast and predict resource allocation. I mean, there's so many impacts of that. And so we probably don't need to convince the team that, you know, coaching is important. I just want to cover one other piece of research before we get into some of the application here. And that's specifically around some talent research that we just completed. And actually, we have a webinar coming up later this month. Alonzo can provide information on that in the follow-up, but to dive into this in more detail. And so this is a whole discussion by itself, but what was fascinating to me, and maybe you can highlight it, Tony, is, you know, when we look at different approaches that are being successful today, and this looked at a number of different skills and competencies and how top performers were executing. And what was interesting is those that were doing a better job translating the requirements into and needs into the solution that they're providing and really understanding the client and kind of anticipating what they need or where they're going versus necessarily provoking or focusing in and narrowing and pitching their product. They were having shorter sales cycles and improved win rates, right? So they were actually doing a better job, which in today's environment is kind of what we want. So that's a quick backdrop, but what was also interesting is the managers over those teams need to do a better job coaching those behaviors to be able to anticipate and translate versus what do managers do if they don't have anything else or don't have a coaching framework? is they tend to get in and narrow and provoke, right? They tell the rep, hey, we need to close this deal, or can you get a commitment, or let's see if we can force the customer to make a decision. And in fact, that resulted in longer sales cycles or lower win rates. Anything else you'd add to that, Tony?
Ray, you there? Hello?
Yep. Maybe I froze up there a sec.
Oh, okay. We're good. All right. Sorry, it dropped for a moment.
Yeah.
Was that a question to me, Ray?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just asking, you know, anything else the manager should think about when they look at, and again, we don't have time to go into all of these approaches, but to help their reps better, you know, translate and anticipate the business needs and being able to, you know, adopt an approach that's going to be more successful in today's environment.
Yeah. So sorry about that. Sorry. I just got a note that said my internet is unstable. And I think it told me that as I did not have internet for a brief moment.
Right. So, it's your internet, not you. So it's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. It's clearly an issue on my side. But I think the key here, we're going to dive into these in more detail actually in a few weeks. So there's actually another SBI webinar where we're going to be going into this in detail. But the key for this audience is you've got to understand the behaviors. You've got to understand the competencies, which ultimately then form these approaches of your team. So once you understand that, then you can specifically coach to it. And you also need to understand what approaches work within your model and which ones don't work. This is a cross-section of data. And I will say, you know, candidly, your results may vary. Most likely they will vary. And that's still an important piece that you have to understand what works for your business. If you are in a high velocity business, maybe narrowing is the right approach because that is all about a prescribed buying process, prescribed buying criteria. If you are in something that, you know, is a data intense business where you need to do a lot of diligence to be able to, you know, get a client bought in, then translation might be the approach that works for you. So they're situational. And the key is that I would just leave you with is you have to understand the makeup of your organization. And you also have to understand what works best in your organization to then develop an effective program to enable and elevate your organization.
It's a great call out. And I think specifically, you know, thinking about the managers, when left to their own devices, they're more likely to, as it says, overcorrect and favoring a narrowing approach. In other words, let's drive urgency. Let's do what we can to get this deal done. And in fact, that's slowing deals down or resulting in lower win rates. So, you know, let's talk about how we can help the managers coach better those behaviors that are going to have a better chance of success. And that's really where the manager component comes in. So I want to keep us moving here, Tony, and talk about, you know, the difference kind of between ad hoc and having a process for coaching and go beyond that ad hoc coaching. But first, you know, I'd really like to get a pulse on the group here. So we'll get some interaction and specifically open up a poll. And let me just do that. And Alonzo, maybe you could open up the poll for me. There we go. Thank you. All right. And so the question is really, you know, if we think coaching is important, we've kind of given the backdrop, a little bit of research behind it. How do your managers learn how to coach? And so, you know, we've all been down this path, I think, where we're thrust into that new role. But do they figure it out on their own? Are they getting mentoring, you know, maybe one-on-one, or they have a good mentor that helps them figure it out? Maybe there is a generic, and there are a lot of good industry neutral programs that maybe not sales specific, but, you know, other programs in place. And then ultimately, participating in a coaching program. So is there a sales specific program? We consider that kind of special forces training, right? Everybody goes through boot camp, but those managers need some special forces training for sales coaching, and the managers always like that to be attributed to special forces. But Tony, what do you think in your experience? You know, what and we'll publish the results here shortly, but what do you typically see across your clients?
Typically I see all four of the options that the panel, that the attendees were given. So, you know, the one that I see that works best is when you actually have a formal coaching program. But, you know, in terms of the, what we see, I mean, Ray, we've all been there. We've seen some companies that put the reps out there and they're like, you know, sink or swim. And we've seen others that are prescriptive, probably to a point that it almost turns away good talent because they're so prescriptive in the day to day. It doesn't leave any room for creativity. And, you know, the balance is you got to figure out the right in between. I mean, you know, people who want to sell, they want to be coached. They want to be guided. They want to have prescription when they need it, but they also want the ability to, you know, quote, embrace the art of the sale. Because, you know, that is where sales gets interesting, is when you're actually solving interesting problems, more complex problems, driving value props. So anyways, we see it all. I wish we could say we only saw one, but there is no one best approach. And even when we see them all, right, what's odd is it doesn't mean that one will work and another won't. It's what's going to work for the particular organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is the case, and Alonzo, maybe you could publish the results here for the audience, but I think a lot of times it is figuring it out on their own, or, you know, maybe they have a good coach that can help drive it. But if I look at our results here, you know, it looks like about over 50% of our audience are in the first two categories. So they're either figuring it out on their own, they're mentoring, a little less than 10% are attending a formal program. And then 35% have a sales specific coaching program, which again is probably going to have the best results of driving it towards improving sales performance, because there are some things that are very unique to coaching a sales team and getting the performance out of that. So when we talk about deal coaching, when we talk about skills related to the sales team, I think that's really critical. Yeah, Christopher has a comment here. It's important to create a coaching culture based on a formal program. And I think that's so important, right? We really need to be able to have everybody think about coaching. And one of the things I've seen is if you ask people, you know, are you a good coach? Like, oh yeah, of course I am. You know, I coach all the time. And really what they're doing is they're telling and they're just directing their team, or they have one-on-one conversations, but they're really not a collaborative coaching conversation. And to that comment, they don't have that culture in place. We're saying, no, we're going to ask first. We're going to get the input. We're going to build that relationship with the individual to help them achieve versus just telling them what to do differently. So, all right. Well, great. Thanks for publishing those results, Alonzo. You know, let's talk about some of the challenges that we see and, you know, maybe why coaching doesn't happen. So in a survey we did with Selling Power a few years ago, 73% of sales managers said they're not getting the training they want to be a good coach. So, you know, that's kind of the backdrop, and that obviously creates that opportunity. But what we've heard is they don't know how to coach. Every time we do a workshop, people say, well, I'm too busy. I don't have enough time to coach. So, you know, I'd like to go out and do more visits or join those calls, but I've got too many things. And I was kind of ask the question, well, what else are you doing, right? What can we stop doing in that case? But they're probably firefighting. You know, they're in that urgent, stuck in that urgent quadrant because everything seems like it has to be done now. They're actually dealing with customer issues or closing deals. They're too focused on just driving the numbers, and they don't have time to really reflect and to think ahead, or, you know, to be engaged as a good coach. Any others you would see or anything you'd highlight here, Tony?
Yeah, the one that I like, and this is a little bit about what, you know, Christopher put there in the chat, is establishing a formal program. You know, to me, I am a big fan of that. And this is an example of one where we had actually developed a coaching playbook for first line managers, different from a sales playbook. I mean, I got sales playbooks around here where, you know, it's got exit criteria and the stuff you need to coach to when you're coaching a deal. This is more about coaching the person. So, you know, just as an example in this one, you know, kind of from a structured perspective, we've got reps who are struggling, reps who are developing, reps who are excellent at what they do. And there's different types of coaching depending on where they fit. Now, someone might have moved from a BDR job into their first field job. And you know, that is a very different coaching than someone you've hired with 5 years of experience from a competitor, and someone who's also been at the company for 5 years and been your consistent top performer. So the key is coaching can't be generic, but you do need a framework. And, you know, that's one of the things that I like when our clients actually go through the process of not only building a playbook to coach the actual process to the buyer process, but also a coaching playbook. Because, you know, if you don't give them some sort of framework, some sort of a structure, you can just expect that every one of your managers and executives will do it differently. And if you want to actually create that coaching, you know, culture that Christopher mentions, yep, you not only have to write it down and make it official and formalize it and standardize it, but then you have to live it. And you actually have to ask people, you know, what are they doing to be better coaches, and take the time to educate them on a regular and a continual basis to make sure they're becoming better coaches as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to think about, okay, if it's important, what gets in the way? And then what are some of the challenges they have to actually have executing it, right? And you're right, they often don't know how to do it. They don't have the time, as we mentioned. They're coaching the wrong reps, or at least they're not coaching everyone. So they're coaching the squeaky wheel and maybe, or the ones who are really challenged, and they may need some other intervention. But in some cases, you can coach them till you're blue in the face, but it's not going to get you there. They need remedial training. They need a course correction. Maybe they need to be on a performance improvement plan. But you know, we talk about that. Who and how are you coaching those reps? And if you don't have a process, if you don't have a playbook, it's going to be ad hoc, right? And managers are going to figure it out based on what they think. But Tony, maybe we could continue on that. And just before we get into the training piece, but, you know, talk a little bit about that coaching playbook and then components that, you know, that you see and that you recommend when you work with a client on building that out.
Yeah. So, you know, just an outline of this example, and it doesn't vary a lot, and it's very similar to some of what's up here on the screen. But like this one, for example, it does actually have an intro that sort of tees up the why we coach, what are we looking to achieve from it, how does it align to our values as a company, our overall mission, and then the methodology itself, just like this slide shows, you know, and what are the stages of coaching? How do you support employees? What is their role? What are some of the pitfalls? And the things when we get into, you know, coaching methodology, and the reason that it's important is it's, you use the term PIPs, you know, and people being on PIPs. That's always like the easy thing to go do. Deal with the poor performers and try to, quote, coach them up. Or, you know, spend time with your top performers and help them get that final deal over the line. But what about that big group in the middle? That's probably 60 to 70% of your team. What are they doing? And how are you turning them into the elite ones? And to do that, you need some sort of a cadence set out. You need to actually have a regular session with them. And it can't just be a forecast session. It needs to actually be a regular session that's helping them improve their skills. And to do that, you've actually got to understand where their skills are, and an individual scorecard and an individual development plan for each person that you actually use in that cadence. And once you've got all those skills, then you can start to think about, what do we need to be doing in our events? Like, in, you know, we might say, hey, in Q1, we're going to focus on negotiation. In Q2, we're going to focus on value selling and ROI justification. In Q3, maybe we're going to focus on exception handling or objection handling. You know, and then that's where the skills come into play. So you need to be thinking about what they need and not just genericize it to them, and then be diligent and be intentional in what you're coaching to and how you're measuring their improvement on those topics that as a coach you were helping them get better at.
That's great. And, you know, there was a question about, are people building their own playbooks? Are they outsourcing? How are they going about that? Can you just share a little bit about the process, Tony, that you typically take a client through to build the playbook? And then we're going to get into, you know, how do we train and execute on that as well? But, you know, what does that look like when it is maybe an outside perspective bringing that in with the templates and the tools, right, as a starting point?
Yeah. So a couple of things. First of all, you really do have to understand the model of the business itself. It is very different selling widgets than it is selling, you know, full-on solution sales. Some stuff has a very quantifiable ROI because, you know, you sell X, you're going to get Y, and it's pretty much a cost takeout or an optimization kind of thing. But then there's others that are much more difficult, right? Like one of the ones I always struggle with and have seen people struggle with is when you have to do something like quantify safety. Well, if you're making a sale to someone based on something being safety, well, it's actually something you can't quantify because it's only unsafe when something bad goes, or something bad happens. So how do you sell when you're trying to quantify something not happening versus something that needs to happen? So that's where you've got to really get into that kind of stuff. And you've got to coach on, you know, in a scenario like that, you're going to have a lot more objection handling. You're going to have a lot more value selling. You're going to have a lot more solution selling to sell that versus something that you're totally selling on speeds and feeds and features and functions. So, you know, you've got to understand that to develop an effective set of skills and competencies to coach too. And, you know, one of the things that William put in Wilson put in the chat here, I also agree with. You got to move the middle. That's the whole concept of this. Usually your top performers, your A players, they're there for a reason, and they tend to get all the best opportunities depending on how you've organized your sales force. And they're usually in a pretty good spot, and you need to keep them there. Your lower performers, i.e. your C players, you know, that's where the hard part of coaching is, because you got to decide whether they're the right fit. They could be a mishire. They could be having something else going on in their life. And you need to determine if it's an issue that is solvable or if it's an issue that can't be solved. But that middle, which is exactly what Wilson put out, moving the middle is what great coaches do. They take the players that are somewhat, you know, mediocre, and they get them to all work together as a team. They elevate the middle, because as much as we would all love to have a team full of A players, by definition, if you had a whole team of A players, it would probably be miserable. I mean, that's the reason why some of these teams that have gone out and using sports analogies, who have bought all the greatest players, can never win a championship because they can't work together. And the same would happen in anyone's go-to-market organization. If you had a whole bunch of superstars who all wanted to take over the world, it would probably be a toxic environment that people wouldn't want to hang out in.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that just reinforces why a coaching playbook needs to be specific to that organization. It needs to be specific to the sales process and the industry and that organization, right? Based on the competencies and skills that the managers have. You know, are they hiring experienced managers, or did they all get promoted a year ago from being a BDR, and where are they starting? So that's where I think that really making it relevant and tailoring it can be, you know, very, very valuable for that group. So let's continue on. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how we execute and then get into some training, but on really getting that ROI out of the investment that you're making in those managers and in the training specifically. And, you know, though these three topics may seem pretty obvious, or it's like, oh, yeah, of course, that's what we'd want to do. But when you really dig into this, and mindsets come up a couple of times, you know, on this discussion already, but how do we develop that coaching culture, right? How do we get people thinking about asking questions, actively listening, and assuming best intentions, right? Assuming that people want to do a good job and now helping them get there, versus assuming that they're screwing up or they're incompetent, right? And then we're just kind of dictating what we want them to do. But it really does take a change to think about what does good coaching look like, and how do we help those managers adopt that? And those are some of the things that we do in our training. And then thinking about who and what skills to prioritize and coach. So to the point of moving the middle, and also for those players, where do we focus? You can't coach everything at once. And one of the challenges we see is, you know, you get off a call and you get a report that says, here are 10 things you should do differently next time. You know, maybe it was auto-generated. It's like, well, you can't prioritize 10 things. What one or two things are really going to make a difference? And let's lean in and focus on those and put those into a coaching plan. And then when we, you know, nail those, let's move on. But that should be developed with the sales professional, not dictated to them, and say, all right, well, where do you think you need help? Let's agree on a couple of priorities, and then I'll really help you, right? Or the manager really helps them to develop those skills and build those opportunities, you know, going forward. And then ultimately having a process to coach. So what does that look like? How's the conversation? How do we open it up? How do we make it positive and really engaging? I mean, coaching should be seen as something that's really positive to the individual, not that something that's being done to them. And oftentimes I think it does feel like, oh, now I'm going to have another coaching session. And it feels like you're being, you know, maybe reprimanded every time. We had a client who didn't even want to use the term coaching because the only time coaching was used was when somebody was on a PIP and they were going to be fired. We're like, oh no, we can't use that. That has a bad connotation. I'm like, that is so sad, right? That's such the opposite of what we'd like to see, which is, hey, everybody should be looking. Even the CEO oftentimes has a coach and they should be aspiring to that. So this is just a framework. I guess any other thoughts, Tony, on, you know, kind of these three components and how we implement that in an organization?
I really love some of the stuff coming out in the chat here and the starving of the B players. Like, I think that's key. I don't know much about the San Diego Padres. If you can't tell, I'm a football fan, so I've got a lot of football analogies. But however, you know, I'm certain based on the stats they're throwing in the chat that the third highest payroll and second to last place is, you know, not symptomatic of a great coaching culture and a great team of A players. So on this one, mindset, you know, I like this simple framework, right? You know, you've got to inspire people. They've got to come into every year. And that's always the challenge. I mean, for those of you who have carried a bag, there is nothing worse than going into the year, not only feeling like you've got a ridiculous number, but feeling like you have no chance. And I remember one time early in my career when I'd first moved to sales after a few years of doing consulting and I was getting my first number, my manager at IBM said, Tony, I've been here for 25 years and the 25 worst days of my career were the 25 days I got my quota handed to me. And, you know, that was the mindset then. But, you know, as coaches, our mindset needs to be, we have not done this as a top-down push. It's been thoughtful. We've got a process. There's plenty of opportunity in your territory with your patch, with your products that you're going to take to market. And this is achievable. And if you do the right things, you can get there. And if we help you, you know, to the point of kind of to the analyze, if we help you upskill in negotiation, because last year you had problems getting stuff over the line, or your deals tended to contract in value as we were getting to the finish line, or you had a real problem moving from unqualified to qualified opportunities, you had a lot of stuff fall out of the pipeline, like understanding the data element of it and then coaching them on the areas where they specifically had challenges, that makes you a great coach. I mean, when you get down to dissecting where they specifically needed help based on facts and based on data or based on assessments or whatever tools you're using, that's how you become a great coach. I mean, you don't just take a generic approach to it and ask everyone to do the same thing. When you get into specific areas, you not only help your company because you're helping them, you know, achieve the overall number for them, but you're helping them as an individual. And that's what's going to keep people. And that's what's going to make coaches great. When people want to be on your team, when people realize that they're getting the great coaching, and, you know, the best coaches are the people who, you know, send people off to go do better things, even within the organization or elsewhere. So to me, you've got to get down to the specific stuff. And that middle one is where I like to focus. So prioritize on what skills to coach and make sure that the coachee agrees that those are areas where they want the help. And if you get that, then you don't have them being resistant to the term coaching. You have them being accepting of the term and wanting to get better.
So important. And I think, yeah, the ability to say, oh, this manager has my back. They're really working with me to help me become better. And that's where I think the difference is on the mindset is, you know, the manager really saying, no, how can I help you be the best possible person? I mean, SBI has the value, right? We want to develop that growth mindset and we want to reach the full potential. How can we help our reps reach their full potential? And I think it's a really important part of that. All right. Well, I want to be sensitive to our time. I'll just cover a little bit on some of the things we've seen on coaching adoption, because that's been a question that's come up. And, you know, specifically as we think about some of the things that are important and success factors, we need to make sure people are aligned and motivated. So having that sponsorship up front, having the managers understand why is this good from a professional perspective, from a performance perspective, they're going to get maybe a badge or a credential or something out of it. So the kind of the why they should lean in, having great training that looks like, you know, whether that's instructor led, virtual, some sort of combination we'll talk about, but they're able to really lean in and role play and practice and make it feel really tangible. And then it's being supported, right? So coaching the coaches, providing feedback and course correction. And then a piece that I think is often missed, and this is in the playbook example, but what is the expectation coming out of there? So what's the cadence? What are we asking the managers to do? And there's nothing worse than, oh, that was great, but I don't really know what I'm going to do on Monday. Or, you know, worse, they forget about it on Monday. So what are the cadence and expectations? What evidence are we going to do? And then how are we going to track that? So is it number of visits? Is it performance improvement? Is it a 360 eval where we're getting feedback from the individual saying, wow, I feel like I'm getting coached? And that's a great win if we can address those things, because it pulls through in retention, it pulls through in sales performance. But these are some of the things that we've found over the years that can help with really adopting some of the things we've talked about. I guess any other adds to this, Tony, before we move on?
No, the only thing I'll say is my favorite is the under number four, coaching the coaches. It is so key. You can't just one and done it and expect them to be great coaches. You have to be intentional. You have to be constant with it because there is always something new. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, who would have thought we'd be coaching people on how to use AI within their business? There's always a new thing, a new trend, a new something that people need to be up to speed on so that they can remain relevant and be great coaches.
That's great. So, you know, in the last few minutes, I just want to talk a little bit about coaching adoption and some of the things we've seen when we are rolling out a coaching program and coaching training. And this idea of collaborative learning, you know, it's certainly something that has caught on, got a lot of traction as people were more virtual and said, well, maybe we can't be in person. How do we address that? And really, it's a great way to create a blended learning experience. We branded it as CLX, right? The collaborative learning experience that says, okay, we're going to introduce the concepts, but in a cohort, we're going to go through this program together. So for coaching, that may be over 3 or 4 weeks where they're getting introduced, they're seeing some videos or getting the content, but then they're immediately applying it. So go assess your team and develop a coaching plan, or go observe a sales call and then provide coaching and come back and let's talk about that. So on a weekly basis, there's a skill application and discussion, and the platform, which I really appreciate as a facilitator, allows you to see the work as it's going. So it's a little bit like an online university. We can now comment on each other's progress. We can see what's working and some of the best practices. And I would say, hey, this is an open book test. So if you find something that somebody is working for somebody else, leverage that. I mean, that's the whole point. So we can learn by collaborating with each other as opposed to just feeling like the training's being done to us. And then it allows us to track their progress through, you know, points and a leaderboard as we go along. But, you know, this has been a great way to bring that training to life. And I just wanted to share because we get not only great feedback, but frankly, higher completion rates. And it allows us to track and publish their progress, and they get a Credly badge at the end. So, you know, great way to bring that to life. And even, okay, we've done a playbook. Now we're doing training. Now let's talk about the execution and the application of that over time. So I'll just cover there a little bit on some of the feedback that we've gotten, but you can see, you know, the participants love this approach, learning from others. They can see what's working, what isn't. We do have a live session every week that's kind of like a coaching session, and we bring up the examples and the application and questions that have come up during the week, right? So having them apply it and then come back and talk about what they're running into and some of the challenges. And they can learn from each other. So, you know, leveraging those best practices. So the last thing I'll just show, and this is just a quick snapshot of the platform, but the idea of that multiple learning types and content that's in there, people learn in different ways. So this helps to leverage that, providing those missions, those assignments, those leaderboard call outs, right? Celebrating those people who are doing well, and also getting feedback from each other, getting that peer to peer and the discussion threads. So Tony, I know we're working on with a couple of clients now on implementing this on a much larger scale as well, right? For playbook implementation and training, both for the sales team and coaching. I guess just anything else you'd add to this, from your experience?
The whole point of this, which is critical, is it's got to be continuous. That's why playbooks are now digital, even though as an old person, I like my printed copies. And they're constantly changing, they're constantly being refreshed, and you need to constantly be investing in your teams. And these types of tools and these types of platforms help you do that for continuous improvement rather than making it a one-time event. One of the things that I learned from our friends here at SRG right after they became part of the SBI family is what a horrible time it is to train at sales kickoff events. And hadn't really thought about that. And, now we've sort of even changed our thinking that it has to be over a period of time. Sales kickoff might be a capstone type event, but, if that's the first time people are seeing it, you can expect retention to be low in what you try to position from that event. So the ongoing and continuous improvement is critical to stickiness and adoption.
No, it's a great call out, Tony. And yeah, I'll say for all of you who are planning training at your SKO, it's fine. I mean, it still happens. It's a great way to highlight or to apply. And I think the point, though, of if you're trying to cram 2 days of training into a half day, it's really challenging, right? And you're probably not going to get that adoption or that behavior. However, if you take the before, during, and after and say, well, let's give them some pre-work, let's have them come in having done some things, let's apply that real life examples on site when they're together, because that time is at a premium. And then let's pull that through with some ongoing reinforcement application, and we can track their progress. To me, that's a great blended program that really pulls through. So we've covered a lot of ground here. I know we're coming up on the hour. Covered, why coaching is important, what managers and coaches are doing, how to personalize and build that coaching program and create the leverage, and then ultimately how to create a collaborative learning experience or, implement that.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer, plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.